Well, it's nice to be the last one before lunch, standing between you and lunch. My name's Lisa Campbell, and my colleague, Dr. Thomas and I, Betsy Thomas and I, would like to present to you an enhanced care coordination program that we developed with our Doctor of Nursing Practice students at Texas Tech in Lubbock. Guns up. Woo! Dr. Thomas and I have no commercial or other relationships to disclose, no conflicts of interest. I just wanted to just highlight our objectives, and we've added a couple, but as nurses and a public health nurse, we always have to highlight our objectives, so we cover all the content. We are going to describe the three essential elements of the logic model to carry out an enhanced care coordination program in nursing homes. Identify at least two components necessary to implement the program, and discuss cost benefits of implementing an enhanced care coordination program in nursing homes. Additionally, Dr. Thomas will be discussing after me the use of the logic model to address an unresolved real-time problem that actually is very complex, and explore practice problem solving using conceptual frameworks to address unique challenges of the problem, people, place, process, and product in nursing home communities. So before I get started, I just have to tell you a very brief story, and I want to ask Helen to tell me when I've gone in 5 minutes, okay? Because I want to allow ample time for my esteemed colleague, Dr. Thomas. The reason why nursing home residents are especially important to me is because my stepfather, who was a surgeon, a brilliant general surgeon in Texas, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. He stayed at home for a prolonged period of time, and at one point my mother could no longer manage him at home. He went to an assisted care facility and then on into the Alzheimer's unit. What I will say to you is that knowing what an Alzheimer's patient goes through, it would be unconscionable for me to think that he had a condition, an ambulatory care condition that required hospitalization from the nursing home, if indeed it could have been prevented. And so, as a former geriatric nurse practitioner, it seemed logical to think of creative ways that we could do enhanced care coordination in a population that's often forgotten and discarded. That's just my opinion. So I wanted to tell you why this is important to me. I'll also disclose a little bit about how this came about in just a moment. But, you know, we think about the cost of hospitalizations to the residents, and of course, there's Helena here talked about the infections, so we've got infections. Celeste talked about medications. There's all kinds of issues, exacerbation of chronic illness, emotional distress occurs, and a diminished quality of life. That is their home. They are nursing home residents. That is their home now. It gives undue emotional stress and financial burden to the family. And healthcare facilities, as Helena said, they are getting sanctions if they have preventable hospitalizations. In society, there's an inappropriate use of community resources when this occurs. So as we address this, we wanted to sort of rethink the problem and look at this unique population, how they're affected, what the impact is, factors contributing to a situation that maybe we didn't even think of, and really come up with an innovative strategy and program to address enhanced care coordination in nursing home population. And we know this is a complex situation, and I'm not even proposing that this is the this is going to win the Nobel Peace Prize, but might help. Okay, so we had this project was introduced last fall to our Doctor of Nursing Practice students at Texas Tech in the course that Dr. Thomas and I taught, Population Health and Epidemiology. What happened was in the summer of 2012, I was approached by a colleague of mine. I also have a consulting business but we didn't feel that this influenced this project whatsoever. So I was approached by my colleague in a major university to evaluate to see if they could pull off a CMS grant for enhanced care coordination in the nursing home population. What they needed was at least 15 nursing homes that had a census of 100 per home, average daily census. So I had access to an acquaintance where I live that happened to be the CEO of a nursing home corporation. They had 29 facilities in South Texas. All of them had a census of at least 100. After going through the CMS grant, it became acutely apparent that the requirements of the grant were going to cost more than we felt based on the research of best practices that we were going to be able to save. Dealing with, Dr. Naylor had looked at research dealing with patients who had CHF on the hospital side, not the nursing home, and it showed that enhanced care coordination could save about 40% or reduce hospitalizations, preventable hospitalizations by 40%. The Auslander et al. Research has showed around the 20% in a six-month program. So needless to say, ethically, we decided not to go forward with it. But I felt it would be a wonderful exercise to see if we could develop this a little bit with the students and maybe pitch it to somebody. So that's the deal. And the whole bottom line is to reduce costs and to really enhance coordination of this population and improve their quality of life. So we have a wide spectrum of DNP students, or Doctor of Nursing Practice students, at Texas Tech. We had chief nursing officers, vice presidents of patient care services, executives that did case management. We had nurse practitioners in the rural and urban setting. We also had a public health commission core officer that worked for HRSA in Dallas. So needless to say, we had a huge brain trust in this room of 21 high-powered professionals that were getting their doctorate, including their two esteemed faculty members. Can't forget us. Okay, so what we wanted to do is to create a visual representation of the program, and you can do that using the logic model. The logic model has been used in the nurse family partnerships. It is evidence-based. It's been used since the 90s to hold government agencies accountable to the taxpayer to really demonstrate what they're doing in programs. So we provided the logic model. Okay, so for those of you who don't have it, two of our wonderful audience members have these. If you'll just raise your hand if you don't have it, and they'll give it to you, because there's no way you can read all this fine detail. I can't even read all the fine details. So if you don't have it, raise your hand. Okay, so this is what we first provided the students. We provided the background information. So the one thing I do want to know, let you know, is that between the years of 2005 and 2010, Texas had $44 billion spent in preventable hospitalizations, and this was for all payers. Let me put this in context. We have 2.6 million seniors in the state of Texas and over 1,100 nursing homes. That was about more nursing homes than Helena got on, I think, on your response rate, right? We have a lot of nursing homes. Yeah, sorry about that. We have a lot of nursing homes. So this is a huge issue in Texas. We provided also some assumptions to the students to create dialogue, to look at the external factors. And I think of the external factors as barriers to implementing a program for the students. And when you create and develop a logic model, when you're starting from scratch, if you look at the logic model, it's facing you. You start from the right and work to the left to develop it. And in the right is going to be your world peace, literally. What is the main objective? And you work back. And if you look at the logic model, the inputs, outputs, and the outcomes, think about Donobedians. Inputs is structure, outputs is process, and then we've got the outcomes. So structure, process, outcome. It's Donobedians on steroids, literally. Okay? So this is what we did with the students, and what you have in your hand is our complete final iteration. I've really already talked about this slide. I'll move forward. We had two sessions with the students to look at emerging concepts, and they were provided with all the background, including the CMS background information. I gave them data from DSHS. I looked at county-specific data for the for the nursing homes. We looked at those that were in the lowest quartile, that were actually the poorest performing counties, so that would have been their referral hospital base. So we really looked at those at-risk nursing home populations that were owned by this nursing home corporation. And what the students created was a bridging between the structure and the process. And we talked and vetted out communication strategies that incorporated telecommunication, education for the nursing home staff, and creation of a new nursing home member, a community health worker that could bridge the gap between the nursing home and the community, could act as a paraprofessional that was culturally relevant in a very high Hispanic population. So without that, I'm going to turn it over now to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Thomas, and afterwards we'll be happy to answer questions. Dr. Thomas.
Being so technically challenged to advance it, we just tap. Is that correct, Helena?
The little arrows here.
Great. Thanks very much, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. It was an exciting endeavor to be involved with such fabulous students who this opportunity, this experience gave a wealth of knowledge and talk about a powerful brainstorming experience. And in allowing them to think about this from very different perspectives, because we had administrators, direct care providers, people from rural health, urban centers, we had the commission corps officer, we had a wonderful collection of people who could give us interesting insights in how we might think about this problem. They came to the idea that we should consider creating some new kind of role and make it evolve from what we know works great in communities, which is the community health worker. And as many of us in public health or in nursing, anybody involved in community programs knows that community health workers have been used and have changed the dynamics of programs, the outreach to people, the ability to get interventions really off the ground and make them successful. And they have been used in all different settings as promotoras, especially often used along border communities or with communities that are very often socially marginalized, as health navigators, certainly as getting people linked to support systems. And they have in many settings, often internationally, but even in very remote rural settings in the United States, doing something as direct care, medication, antibiotics for TB control, that type of thing. One thing we wanted to get across, and this group of students that we worked with, even when they came from an acute care setting, they quickly understood that when we're talking about nursing homes, this is a home. This is where people live. This is a community. It's not a facility. These are people who have long-term relationships with each other, the staff, the patients, the families, the providers that come and go, even the lady who does the hair or the barbershop. It is a community. And so they almost needed more than just somebody who could give information back and across. They needed a communication broker. And that, from that perspective, we thought we need to think, would we evolve this kind of person? So, all right. So there's always a lot of people in the room that go, oh my God, she's bringing up theory. But theory can actually give us some fabulous insights, and it can connect us to ways of interventions have worked really well, and why do they work? And we know the guru of diffusion of innovation, Everett Rogers. He helped introduce and really instill in public health the idea of homophily, that you really have to have some kind of individual that is close to the people that you want to do the intervention, that can speak to those people from their perspective. If you really want to get a change off the ground, you need change agents that are closely connected. And so that's why community health workers work so great in so many of the interventions. So we wanted to think, is there a way we could develop a nursing home community health worker who could speak to, but particularly reflect the perspective of the residents and their families, instead of just mirroring the language and the practice of licensed professionals between the nursing home and hospitals. And so we felt if we're going to develop an enhanced care coordination team, we need somebody like that. We need that kind of individual who would represent the interests of the person as a member of their community, and not just a patient in a facility that we're just transferring information across. And we felt that the nursing home community health worker could be both a bridging agent between the families, the residents, but also the staff, because they would know the challenges the staff were going to face, and they would be able to speak to those specific care needs that the staff would know the resident would need, and that the patients and the family would know are important for quality of life. Those extra things that make a difference and in that say whether somebody has a quality of life or is just lingering in a bed. We felt that person could be a familiar face and voice going to the hospital, visiting that resident, visiting with the family. And in some way, we're not sure how much, but be almost a cognition stabilizing force, because the voice and the face would be particularly recognizable. And Lisa shared with her personal story. I think many of us may have a personal story of a close loved one or a friend who's been in a nursing home. My mother lingered in a nursing home for a couple years after suffering several strokes. And she was particularly close to some of the CNAs. And when one CNA, who was a lovely woman, she was originally Nigerian-born, she lived in the Houston Metroplex for many years, whenever O would walk into the room, my mother would light up, even if she had been almost asleep and not responding to the voices of other visitors. When O walked in the room, she lit up, she was attentive, she heard what O was saying, and she became engaged. And we felt that that kind of person could do the same thing when this resident has to go to the hospital, hopefully to keep that visit not something that has to happen again going to the hospital. So we felt that these kind of community health workers could be working with the nursing team. They would be able to reflect the particular needs of that nursing home community. They'd be able to help build a care coordination across the two facilities and create some, if possible, create a seamless transition. If not possible, make it seamless to make it less disruptive and to really try to meet those challenging needs of the residents. Now, we actually have the students think about who would these people be? How would we recruit them? Sounds like we're coming up with a totally different kind of community health worker. And they thought that recruiting them from family members, people who had family members in the nursing home, could be a wonderful pool of possible persons for this new role. In many, many states, there are designated roles for a nursing home ombudsman, but often those roles, even if they're voluntary, they are still asking people to go into different nursing homes and to pick out problems. We didn't want to recreate that. we wanted to have this kind of person be that bridging connection. And so the ranks of senior CNAs who are wonderful, who have tremendous communication skills, and other certified community health workers from the community, especially from the community where most of the residents have lived. And alternately, I'm throwing out this idea, and I'm not sure the team really actually thought about it that much, but I think it's worth considering that we now know, increasingly, we are having wonderful baccalaureate-prepared graduates from public health programs. And oftentimes, they become wonderful community educators. How about we back up and ask that the question, how about the community of nursing homes? These folks could be a wonderful pool, and we might want to consider in the future even creating this kind of role from this pool of new graduates. So basically, our students came up with what they thought would be a three-part proposal. They definitely knew there's some kind of 24/7 technology needed to be available for the charge nurse, especially those young charge nurses who really don't know, should this person go to the ER? What do I need to do? Having a connection 24/7 to either a nurse practitioner or a provider that they could ask questions and get a sense, can we keep this person in our facility, in our nursing home? Secondly, they knew that they needed to be able to talk to the people who work there and help them educate. If the goal is to keep them out of the hospital, and if we know it's an important goal because it's not good for our residents to have to go back and forth into the hospital, how do we do that? So an education, whether it's frequent, whether it is initial and then repeated every 60 days and not as detailed, because oftentimes the families will think, send my mom to the hospital. They need to be able to communicate to the families why it's not so good. That's not a great solution. Let's see if we can work your mom's situation so we can keep her here in her home. And then the idea of using those nursing home community health workers. And what are the unique qualifications that those people need to bring to the table? What kind of background? What are the skill sets? I've already mentioned my mom's wonderful CNAO. She had fabulous communication skills. She knew how to engage people from all kinds of disciplines. And she had incredible patience. She practiced a lot of sophisticated communication skills that could have easily been taught to other people in a more formalized program. So lastly, why does it matter to use a logic model? A logic model really helps get us crystallized. It helps, especially it's important when we're talking from a nursing perspective, because we need to be able to solve problems in particular situation. And we need to be able to, secondly, use the diffusion of innovation category of how you get ideas across and how they become adopted. Find those people in those communities, those categories of people that are going to spearhead it, that will champion it, and even recognize those people that are going to be reticent to a change. We need to address that early so we can find a way to move those ideas forward. Lastly, I throw out the idea of positive deviance, and I put up a little quotation there. And initially, it sounds pretty awful. I don't want any positive deviance. But the idea that there are in almost every community, there's somebody who does something really great. They almost instinctively know how to attack a problem from a unique perspective. And that's the kind of thing that we need to incorporate in a solution. Who are those uniquely great problem solvers in those nursing home communities? And how can we help them be a part of this kind of care coordination team? So let's use this positive deviant. And actually, a colleague of mine has said that we shouldn't just try to find them. Maybe we need to consider the positive deviance may even need to be a goal, because we are going to need to find intentional, honorable decisions in ways to be exquisitely innovative in particular settings. And that is often challenging, but those are the ways to make really significant changes happen in unique settings. And so we took our logic model, and you can say it is well connected to the idea of the diffusion of innovation that Rogers talked about. We, through the different development of the roles, through identifying those different categories of people who will move the innovation forward. So basically, we included those concepts in the resulting proposal idea. And lastly, I'd like to acknowledge these fabulous people who were part of that brain trust. That group of students were incredible. They were committed and engaged. They didn't just work through it. They really embraced the idea that we have the potential here in this room to come up with something dynamic and innovative. And so I want to thank them, our acknowledgments to our department chair, Dr. Barbara Cherry. God bless her. She let us do innovative, occasionally out-of-the-box things in the class. And I think that's it. And we'll be open to us, our contacts. And I am in Texas Tech red and black, but I had to put my little emblem for A&M. I just started at Texas A&M in the summer. And it's all okay because Texas A&M is now in the SEC. They don't play Texas A&M Tech anymore, so we can talk to each other. I mean, it's a big deal in Texas. All right. Thank you. We have some questions. And we'll be glad to entertain your questions.
I'll just use the microphone so everybody hears. We were thinking about the Affordable Care Act, and we're going to have to think of creative practice models. And we thought that this would be a great bridge between the nursing home and other facilities that a resident might go to, even out to see the physician, for example. And in many of these nursing homes in this corporation, they are in rural areas. I can think of one in Refugio, Texas. They have a high Hispanic population, and the corporation actually really has a hard time finding professionals to do like that social work kind of navigation. And we thought a paraprofessional would be a really good alternative that would be culturally relevant to that population. Thank you. Yes, Celeste. Okay. So in my own community, what I began to do as a public health nurse, and I think this is a really important point for all of us in public health, is to engage the community for them to understand what the local public health system is. And we had 27 stakeholders at the table, including the nursing home, to evaluate our local public health system. This was the first time they were actually engaged and at the table and on the radar. And so, yes, absolutely, that would definitely be a logical bridge. And I think we have an ethical obligation to help our communities understand what the local public health system is and engage and bring in the nursing home into that process. That's a good point. Yes, ma'am.
Being an economist, I worry about costs.
Yes.
I was wondering, are you thinking of this as a volunteer
No, it would be a paid position. In the state, that's a great question. In the state of Texas, the pay range would be somewhere between $10 to $14 an hour. The community health workers that were trained in our area all are retired professionals, anywhere from principals to nurses to educators. But they want to be engaged. And we also, we took it a step further and actually sat down with the nursing home and the local AHAC to see if they would pilot it. We're still in some discussion. We're not sure if they're going to pick it up. We were talking about maybe trying to see if we could get a little grant funding to see, to just give it a try. Is it doable? What would be the functions, to operationalize it more? So, and they were willing to look at that, but that's still on the table, but that's a very good question. And you're right, it is what is the return on investment? But look, let me tell you something. If you're preventing hospitalizations and you're preventing sanctions for the nursing home and the hospital, and when you've got hospitals now that, because of the 1115 waiver, have to do community health assessments, have to develop programs, it is in their best interest to invest in innovative models that are cost-effective, but we have to document that.